Oyez, the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Please be seated.
The court has three matters on its oral submission docket in the order of their appearance. They are docket number 060518. Rory Lewis, M.D. versus Dwayne Funderburk, is my friend of Whitney Funderburk from Limestone County in the 10th Court of Appeals District. Docket number 060814, Texas Mutual Insurance Company versus Paula Ledbetter and others from Jones County in the 11th Court of Appeals District. And docket number 060873, Canyon Regional Water Authority versus Guadalupe Blanco River Authority from Guadalupe County and the 4th Court of Appeals District. Justice O'Neill is sitting in all three cases. She has had a family emergency, so she couldn't be here this morning. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in each of these arguments and will take a recess between the arguments. We should complete all of them before noon. These proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the arguments should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is now ready to hear argument in 060518, Rory Lewis, M.D. versus Dwayne Funderburk.
I will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. Good morning. I'm Andrew McRae with Will Barber. We represent Dr. Rory Lewis, who is seated behind us in the first row. This is a medical malpractice case arising under what I still call the new law, Chapter 74 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code. There are two main issues, I think, to be addressed today. The first is, did the Waco Court of Appeals have jurisdiction, interlocutory appeal jurisdiction, over the appeal that we filed after the trial court denied our second motion to dismiss? The other main issue I intend to address today is, if there is jurisdiction, which we think there was, may the plaintiff cure a deficiency in an expert report by filing a new report from a new physician? There are two other issues we have briefed for the court. One is the qualifications of this second physician. The other is the sufficiency of the report by the second physician. Respectfully, from a statewide jurisprudence standpoint, I think the first two issues are the more important. So those are the issues I intend to spend most of my time on today. Excuse me. I do want to clarify, when talking about jurisdiction, first of all, is I do not dispute that the Waco Court of Appeals did not have jurisdiction under Section 51.014A10 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code. We are also not arguing about the decision by the Court of Appeals that it didn't have jurisdiction over our attempt to appeal the first trial court order. What I am arguing today is that the Court of Appeals did have jurisdiction under 51.014A9. The reason I say that, or the reason I want to make that clear, is because I think there was some confusion, perhaps in the Court of Appeals, as to which statute we were proceeding under. In our motion to dismiss, we argued 74.351B, which says that if a report is insufficient, the case can be dismissed and attorney's fees awarded. That motion was denied.
It's a very difficult statute to parse, but as I read it, the phrase "has not been served" has two different meanings. Under B, it would mean no report has filed at all, has been filed at all, period. And in that event, the defendant can move to dismiss the trial court's denial of that motion, and then there's an interlocutory review. But there's another meaning to "has not been served," and that's when a report has been filed, but there are elements missing from that report. And there the trial court can grant the 30-day extension, and the defendant may not file an interlocutory appeal. Do you agree with those propositions?
I agree with that reading, Judge. Yes, I do. That is one of the reasons why we did not appeal from the very first order, because the trial court granted an extension.
Then explain how there was no report filed at all, giving under 74.351B, that gives you the right to appeal.
The first time around, Judge?
Well, you said that you are appealing 351B?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and under my reading, that means a report has not been served at all. So is that the case here?
I'm sorry, maybe I misunderstood your first question. I think there are two circumstances under which a report has not been served. One is there's no report at all, and the other is there's a report, but it's deficient.
Okay, now, just to get back, as I read it, if there's no report filed at all, then there is an appellate remedy.
I agree.
Under the Civil Practice and Remedies Code. But if a report is filed but it's missing elements, then that gives rise to the 30-day cure period. And as I read it, the defendant can move to dismiss the claim under, that would be under C, 351C, only if there's not been a good faith effort to comply.
I think I'm in agreement with you, Your Honor, but
so just to refocus it.
What part of C says you can dismiss anything?
No part of C says anything about dismissal, Your Honor.
Can you deny or dismiss under C at all? I don't see anything.
I don't believe so, no, Judge.
That's just an extension, right?
Right. I think, though, the way to interpret the statute is that if a trial court exercises its discretion under C and allows an extension, then you start over. And then you go back to A. Because what the plaintiff is required to do to proceed with a lawsuit is satisfy subsection A. And if you get all the way to C and the court says, I'm going to exercise my discretion, I'm going to give you 30 days, then what the plaintiff is required to do is try again to satisfy subsection A. So I think you go back and start over. And the reason I'm so sure about that is because subsection S says that until the plaintiff satisfies subsection A, the case is stayed and no discovery or very little discovery can go forward. So by implication, I think what the statute says is that in order to go forward, the plaintiff must satisfy subsection A either the first time around or the second time around.
Just to refocus, you contend that the Court of Appeals has jurisdiction under the Civil Practice Remedies Code, but 74.351B of the Medical Act.
Yes, Judge. I think the jurisdiction is conferred by 51.014A9.
Correct.
Because there was denial of relief that we had requested under 74.351B.
And the basis of your denial of relief was what?
The trial court's denial of our relief?
Yeah, the basis of your motion to dismiss was what?
The second motion to dismiss was that the second physician was not permitted, that one must cure a deficiency in a report with something from the same physician. Secondly, that even if you are allowed to submit a report from a new physician, then this particular physician was not qualified. And thirdly, even if you can have a second physician, and even if this person is qualified, the report itself was insufficient.
What language in the statute do you point to for your argument that the expert report requirement has to be satisfied by the same expert?
The cure the deficiency language, Your Honor, in 74.351C, it says, if an expert report has not been served because elements of the report are found deficient, the court may grant an extension to the claimant in order to cure the deficiency. In my reading of the statute, cure the deficiency means that the elements of the report are deficient.
But cure the deficiency doesn't say anything about one, two, three, or four experts. I mean, what about cure the deficiency means the same expert has to, serving the same expert report, has to be not only the report that's found deficient, but also that expert has to provide the information and the report to cure the deficiencies. What about that language says that?
I think that language is not in there, Your Honor, to answer your question straightforwardly. I think I'd point the court to the Danos versus Ritger case out of the Court of Appeals in Houston, which says that analyzed the current statute versus the old statute. The old statute said you can give an extension to satisfy this section, and the new statute says you can get an extension to cure the deficiency. The Court of Appeals said there must be a difference. The legislature doesn't change the language to say the same thing.
But in the Havner line of cases, we encouraged trial courts and defendants to bring these challenges to an expert early so that if the expert, the plaintiff's expert, was not qualified, we wouldn't just toss somebody out because their lawyer picked a bad expert, but that they would have a chance to cure the problem. Your reading would be a different rule for malpractice cases.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. And I think this is the issue that came up yesterday in the other case, the Leland versus Brandel case. Under the statute and under the case law, it is the plaintiff's burden to demonstrate the expertise of his or her expert. If this were the first report, if the second report was in fact the first report, and if there was some indication in that report that this person, Dr. Hughes, was indeed qualified in that he was either board certified or had substantial training or experience and was rendering medical care, and it was a close call, I think I would say that the trial court can allow that doctor, Dr. Hughes, to expand on his qualifications to ensure the trial court is satisfied that he is qualified. On this record, though, we have a second report, so there's no chance to fix this. So if we get to the qualifications of Dr. Hughes, he has not demonstrated his qualifications, and there's no chance to fix it, regardless of whether he was permitted to write that report or not.
But that's the plaintiff's problem. I mean, if they file one expert report and the expert's determined to be not qualified and they want to try to fix that, or they're worried about the qualifications, and they try to fix it and they don't fix it, it's going to get dismissed. But if they do fix it, why shouldn't they be entitled to do that?
I think the way the statute is written, Judge, and Justice, and the way the Court of Appeals, the Third Court of Appeals, has analyzed it is the plaintiff has a chance early on. The Austin Court of Appeals in Bogar analyzed 74.351L and what that means. And they said, number one, 74.351L, the good faith effort, is the burden of proof for that must be met. The other thing that 74.351L seems to say, according to the Bogar Court, is that if a plaintiff's expert report is filed early on, let's say it's filed within 20 days of the filing of the case, then the defendant must object within 21 days. So now you're 41 days out. And if the plaintiff is concerned about the qualifications of that expert, he or she can get a hearing and get a ruling on that early on and still has the 120-day period, or what's left of it, to satisfy any concerns about the qualifications.
But under your construction, if they're wrong about the qualifications of that expert, if the expert said he had a medical degree, it turns out he doesn't have one, they cannot find a doctor with the requisite expertise and substitute that report in to cure the deficiency of the lack of a degree.
If we're after the 120 days and the defendant has moved under 74.351B,
he's stuck with the first.
I think he's stuck.
Within the 120 days, under your theory, the answer to the Chief's question, it seemed would still be yes. The plaintiff would be stuck with the deficient report because you can't substitute in a new expert, as I understood you to say earlier.
I think you can, Your Honor, because the only way the trial court is applying C is if the motion to dismiss is brought under B. Those two statutes apply together. If, as the Court of Appeals said in the Bogar case, that a defendant proceeds under L, which is something other than a motion to dismiss, something within the 120-day period, then it looks like it can be cured with a new expert. And that's what the Beaumont Court of Appeals said in the Heiner versus Gaspard case. There was a new expert that came in, but it was within 120 days. And so, therefore, B and C really didn't apply because you can't file a motion to dismiss until 120 days have passed. Going back to the Court of Appeals opinion, the court, respectfully, I think the Waco Court of Appeals missed the issue, which is a jurisdiction under A9. It held there's no jurisdiction under A10. Again, I don't disagree with that. What the dissent says is that the majority says There's no jurisdiction from the appeal from the denial of a second report. Respectfully, I don't think that's what the majority said, and I don't think that's what the majority meant. In a recent court case from the same Court of Appeals, Hill Regional Hospital versus Runnels case, which is a memorandum opinion, the petition has been filed in this court. The Court of Appeals denied jurisdiction after an appeal from a first motion to dismiss, citing to Funderburk. So it appears to me from that case and applying it to this case that the Court of Appeals has mistakenly concluded that we were proceeding under L and that the defendant in the Runnels case was proceeding under L when in fact we were proceeding under B. The dissent says that the precedential effect of the majority opinion is there's no appeal from a second order. I agree with that in this case. And that is the ultimate effect of the opinion in this case, but I don't think that's what the majority actually came out and said. I do agree with the rest of the dissent's opinion and its parsing of sections A, B, and C. I think the gist of the dissent's opinion is that under subsection C, if an extension is granted, you go back to A and B, and the second report is an attempt to satisfy A, and therefore a defendant can proceed under B and so forth. You just don't get to C again.
Under B, there has to be no report filed.
No, Your Honor. I think it's either. The language of the statute is no expert report has been served. And I think if you read B and C together, and I think as most courts of appeals have read them, no report served means either, one, there's no report at all, or a report has been given to the other side, but it's insufficient.
And that's what I was saying in the beginning. Under B, no report. I see B as saying no report at all, and C saying a report was served, but it was not sufficient. Because that's where the cure comes in, under C.
I agree that under C, you cannot cure a non-report. I'm not sure if that's what you're asking, though. I'm sorry. I see my time's up. Can I help further with that?
Okay. It's a difficult statute, but you have two readings of has not been served, and under 754.351B, it seems to me that's the circumstance where there has not been any report. The claimant has been completely silent, hasn't satisfied the 120-day time period, and then the defendant can move to dismiss and a denial is subject to review. C talks about a report that's filed but is missing one or more elements. And I see a distinction between those two. And under C, then there's this opportunity to cure. One-time 30-day opportunity. And it seems to me that your case falls under C and not B.
I think the way the trial court read it, Your Honor, or the way the trial court proceeded, yes, she was proceeding under C. But I think that there are two ways that a defendant can proceed under B. One is if there's no report filed, no report at all, nothing exists, which was the case in our case. That's one way, and I think in that case, C doesn't apply because there's no report at all, there's nothing to find deficient. And so therefore, under B, the trial court is required to dismiss him with attorney's fees. The other way that a defendant can move under B is if there has been a report, in quotes, report served, submitted, but it's not deficient, and therefore it is considered unserved, in which case the defendant can ask for dismissal. The plaintiff then can say, I want an extension. I think under either circumstance, though, that ultimately we get the right to appeal.
Further questions?
A report from a plumber. How would you characterize such a report?
No report.
Thank you, Counselor. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court. Ms. Thomas will present argument for the respondents.
Good morning, judges, chief justice. My name is Amy Thomas. I'm an attorney from Mejia, Texas, and I represent Whitney Funderburk. I'd like to say it's an honor to be here this morning and to present argument for Ms. Funderburk. And just reading the statement out there, the equal justice to all, and I am representing just one young lady from Groesbeck in Limestone County, but I think the importance to this case expands to many, many, many people across the state whose cases are being dismissed without their day in court.
Well, not exactly without their day in court.
Well,
the statute says you got your day in court, you're here in court, we want a report, or else, and if you don't send them a report, yes, like everybody else who doesn't have a case, you get kicked out.
I agree with that if there is no report. I think many, many cases are being dismissed now on sufficiency of the report, and I think that goes back to Chief Justice's question as to what section we appeal under. And the appeal is allowed under B if there is no report. And I think when you go back and look at Chapter 51014 on the appeal from an interlocutory order, it says there is only an appeal if it grants relief sought by a motion under 74, under L.
I'm having trouble finding this difficult. In C, it says if an expert report has not been served within the period specified by A because elements are found deficient. Let me try it this way. You say in B, has a report has not been served means no report at all, and that's all it means. They say, but when the legislature said has certain expert report has not been served, as you can tell from looking in C, they meant deficient reports too.
And I think they meant deficient reports in the only to the extent that that allows that granting that 130-day extension.
But there's no question in C, when they say an expert report has not been served, they thought that included deficient reports.
Okay.
There's no way to read C otherwise than that's what they thought those words meant.
I respectfully disagree. I believe that replies to granting the 130-day extension.
If an expert report has not been served because elements are found deficient, they must have thought an expert report has not been served included where the elements are found deficient. That's what they thought, or they wouldn't have said that, right?
I agree with that.
So how can we, if that's what they thought those words meant in C, how can we say, but they must have thought the words meant something else?
Well, when you go down to L, though, when it specifically says a court shall grant a motion to challenging the adequacy of the court only if it appears to the court after hearing it does not represent a good faith effort. In that section, the legislature goes and specifically speaks about the adequacy of the report, the first report, second report, or however combined. And then the legislature specifically said that there was only interlocutory appeal if that motion is granted, meaning I believe there's two rights for an interlocutory appeal. One, if the defendant's motion to dismiss is denied because there's no report. And two, if the defendant's motion to dismiss is granted based on the inadequacy of the report. So I think when you can stop at C and say, well, there the legislature was backing up and allowing the physicians to always have an interlocutory appeal on any determination of the expert report. And I think it clearly conflicts with that when it says, but we're not going to do it when you're talking about the adequacy.
You'd agree with me if down at the somewhere in this statute, the legislature said the words has not been served as used in this section means no report and deficient reports, then in that case, the defendant would be here appealing an interlocutory appeal under B.
I don't know. I've read this so many times. I really don't know where it has said not been served other than subsection C.
Let me break it down then.
Okay.
If they can appeal under B, they can have an interlocutory appeal.
Correct.
And if the legislature said has not been served, when we use has not been served in B, we mean no report and deficient reports. then they would have an interlocutory appeal in this case.
I believe with your reading, if you stop at subsection C, that's a possibility. But I think when you have to read the statute as a whole and determine why else would they put subsection L in there and put under chapter 51014, subsection 10, that it only says grants relief. So they could have easily said denies or grants relief under subsection 10 of chapter 51, as they did in number 9. And I think it's, you know, for rule of statutory construction, you have to read it as a whole.
But if they, define a term, this is what we mean. We've got to go with that.
I don't know that that's defined. I really don't. I think that's only defined when
I'm not trying to get you to admit away your case.
Right.
If the legislature defines a term, this is what we mean by these words, court's got to go by that when you're construing a statute. We have no choice.
I totally agree with that. I disagree that that term has been defined in this statute, and I believe that there's been conflicting provisions on there. The purpose of Chapter 74 was really to shield doctors from frivolous cases. And
how is that purpose served if the plaintiff files a report that's wholly deficient and you can't appeal from it?
Well, I think it goes to what your question was to the petitioner in the first. That's if later on in the trial of the merits, if I don't continue to rely upon an expert. But I think as long as it's a good faith effort to comply, which in this case I believe it is, and then
I'm misunderstanding you then. I thought you thought that under B you can appeal only if no report is served at all.
I agree. Under B for a defendant, okay. Only no report served at all.
And so my question is, how does that, you said that the purpose of this is to keep frivolous claims out, and if you were trying to keep them out, why wouldn't you allow an appeal from a report that was just completely deficient?
Because under Chapter 51014, it says we're not going to allow interlocutory appeals on deficiency reports.
But surely that undermines the purpose of the statute.
The purpose is served because the purpose of the statute deals with the trial on the merits, Chapter 74, the whole case from beginning to end. And Chapter 51 just deals with interlocutory appeals. But when you look at Chapter 74, it also says, subject to subsection T, an expert report under this section is not admissible in evidence, not to be used in deposition and trials, and shall not be referred to by any party. So obviously the legislature was contemplating that a plaintiff may serve a expert report in the beginning rely totally on a total other expert.
Your expert report was the letter by Dr. Roten.
That is the expert report, that the initial one that was not appealed.
Right. That's the one you filed to meet the statute.
That was the one. Yes, sir.
And it doesn't say, I can't find anything in it where he says anybody did anything wrong.
And then at that point, we're going back and opening the order.
There's nothing in there that says anybody did anything wrong.
I don't have that. I don't have that in front of me. I know that
take my word for it. There's nothing in there that says anything wrong.
And I've read Justice Gray's
decision. So could you just, what if you just filed the front page in the Mahan newspaper? Would that be count as a report?
No, sir.
Okay, so what's your definition of no report? It doesn't include a newspaper, but it does include something that doesn't even say anybody did anything wrong. So what's the line between them?
That report refers to the ultimate injury that the plaintiff served.
It definitely has the plaintiff's name, and it's about her. But it doesn't say any doctor or anybody did anything wrong. But that is report, so we can't dismiss under B because you did serve something.
And we can't dismiss under B now because I wholeheartedly agree that had the court, they probably, if they would have exercised their right of appeal in 04, that more than likely this case probably would have been dismissed.
The trial court.
If the trial court had not afforded me
the an trial extension. Court could and should have dismissed that report under L, right? Because it doesn't represent a good faith effort if it doesn't say anyone did anything wrong.
I think then it's going back to whether or not it's no report.
Well, the defendant can move to dismiss a claim when elements like those Justice Brister was talking about are missing if the report does not represent a good faith effort under Chapter 11. The problem with that is if the trial court doesn't dismiss, then we're in Justice Heck's scenario, that a grossly deficient report doesn't result in the right to an interlocutory appeal when the trial court denies a motion to dismiss. And there seems to be something wrong. It's either something missing in the statute, they just didn't think about it, or perhaps your reading of the statute is wrong.
Well, I believe at that point it should have been a determination as to whether or not that was any report at all should have been appealed at that time. And it's clear that the second report is some type of report.
Counsel,
no matter how deficient it is, the second report you can't appeal. That's your position, I think.
I think it's challenging the adequacy of the report. I think you can only look at the good faith effort. So
I was just saying, no matter how inadequate it is, you can't appeal from the second report.
I agree. Under the way the law is written, and L can appeal under an interlocutory order.
Which means if you file a report that has no qualifications or insufficient qualifications in it or insufficient causal relationship, the trial court gives you a 30-day extension, you change two lines in the report and file that as your next report, you have the same problem in the same report, just refiled first time around, you could appeal it if the trial, you've got the same report, but you can't do anything about it then. Very same report filed under the 30-day extension, but you can't do anything about that under your construction.
I agree.
That's
the only way I can read the statute.
There's another part of the statutory construction, our rules on statutory construction, that say that we follow the definitions given us and that we read the language plainly as it is, but that we try to avoid absurd results. It seems as though that if you have the same report that is deficient and refile that as your report in the 30-day extension, but that deficient report still doesn't tell the defendant anything about the case, that might be approaching an absurd result for us to interpret the statute that way.
I think that's probably reading the language too literally, because I believe just the good faith effort means you identify the standard of care, how it was breached,
but we've
and
already
the
had the trial court determine that it's a deficient report, doesn't meet the standards. And you file the same report again, and the trial court says it still doesn't meet the standards.
Well, I think at that point, you haven't complied with serving an expert report. I think if the court says one time it's not sufficient and you submit the same report and it says it's not sufficient, the defendant's entitled to dismiss the case.
And if the trial court doesn't, the defendant doesn't have the right to an interlocutory appeal. That's the issue we're facing.
It's confusing. So,
under your construct, you could have a circumstance where a plumber's report is, as you see it, sufficient to satisfy the expert report requirement. You can get there.
Believe that, especially when you look under the qualifications of an expert witness.
Well, if a plumber's report is filed and you get a continuance, then you change a couple of sentences in the report, there's no interlocutory appeal.
I think you would still not have an expert report as it is defined under the statute.
But there's no interlocutory appeal.
I believe there's no interlocutory appeal on the sufficiency of the report.
So under your construct, you could get to trial on a plumber's report.
I don't think we'd get very far with that. And obviously, the legislature's contemplating this report is just a bare bones attempt to just show there's good faith in the lawsuit.
Maybe in part what's happening is the legislature has a certain amount of confidence that trial courts will follow their obligation under the statute to dismiss grossly deficient reports.
Okay, so, and then if they do, then the plaintiff has the right to appeal it.
Yes.
Right.
And the reason they took the extraordinary step of allowing interlocutory appeals is because they were so confident trial judges would do this all the time. It doesn't the fact that they made this an interlocutory appeal indicate they did not have much confidence trial judges would do this all the time?
I don't think it was any reflection on the trial judges.
Well, House Bill 4 was a reflection on they didn't think our system was working. Right? And the whole reason for all of this was because, it's been the law in Texas for 100 years. You can't sue a doctor without having a doctor there that's going to establish standard of care. But apparently, a lot of places, cases were just rattling around for years with no expert and no hope of ever getting one. And that's the whole reason they did all this, was because they weren't confident that trial judges were making plaintiffs in medical malpractice cases get an expert. Wouldn't you agree with that? That's why they did all this?
I think they agree. They did all this as part of the Medical Liability Improvement Act that was intended to get rid of frivolous cases. And I think if you still don't have that report and the trial court doesn't do that, those defendants still have their motion for summary judgments that would allow them to dismiss a case. And surely if the plaintiff didn't have an expert, the trial court would grant it.
But a lot weren't. You may not have been practicing around.
I probably wasn't. I do know that it seems at this point that this law, when it's getting construed, it's such where the claimant is having to litigate their merits on a report. When clearly, when you look at the statute, it says you may not ever use that report again. But we're going to dismiss your case on that report, and I think that's therein lies the problem. You know, the appellate courts are never supposed to be sitting as a 13th juror, but now the medical malpractice plaintiffs are not ever. It's the appellate courts and the trial courts are getting to sit at that first juror, and these cases.
Address. They say even your second report's inadequate because he's a family practitioner, not an orthopedist.
But even as a family practitioner, he states in his report that he treats fractures, he diagnoses fractures, and sometimes refers them out, but he still in his report says as a family practitioner he treats wrist fractures, which is the exact same injury in this case.
Certainly not the same school of practice.
Well, I would agree. Maybe family practice and orthopedics are not the same school, but the law allows for them to overlap in the per year exception where there's just the general area. But I think in this case, as a family medical practitioner, he treats orthopedic problems as well as might treat diabetes problems.
Does he say he sets bones and fractures?
I have to keep the report right in front of me. I know he put treats. That would be, to me, I think he said the proper way to treat it would be to put it in a hard cast, immobilize it, and x-ray it at regular intervals, which was not done at any time in this case. She was put in a soft cast, then put in a hard cast with no x-rays, and never x-rayed during the whole 6 weeks, and her arm was taken out of the cast and still not x-rayed. So I think Dr. Hughes' report clearly says, I do these things. And in these cases, this is what I do. And what I do is backed up with authority, which he cites therein.
Any further questions? Do you want to conclude? I'm sorry.
Well, I was here last time on uninsured, underinsured, and it always seems like it's the ones with really complex issues, and I respectfully I'm very honored to be here today, and I know that there is a conflicting among the appellate courts. But I believe in this situation and the facts in this case, with the second report, that this is not a case that the legislature intended to be dismissed, and it's not a case where the legislature intended for there to be an interlocutory appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Counselor. Rebuttal.
May it please the Court, I'd like to pick up where the respondent left off and talk about the facts of this case and talk about why those facts are, I think, almost the exact situation that the legislature had envisioned when it talked about an interlocutory appeal. What we have here, in response to your question, Justice Wainwright, is we don't even have a report from a plumber. We have something that's been plucked out of the medical records that doesn't even address Dr. Lewis, doesn't say anything about the standard of care, or breach, or damages.
But it is a non-report. But that was an appeal, was it? That's not what we're here about today, is it?
It was not appealed, Justice Johnson.
We're clearly under the exception because that's not here. That's what I understood.
Well, I'm not appealing, Your Honor, from the first court's order. That's what I was trying to say.
The determination it was a report.
Right. I don't think I had the right of appeal. There is some confusion, I think, among the courts of appeals whether is that really no report, in which case there can't be an extension, in which case I could appeal. But what I'm trying to get at is, and in response to your comment about an absurd result, we have a non-report. I don't think anybody really thinks that was a report. It's a letter from a doctor. We then have, and I want to talk about the timeline a little bit as well, because the legislature squeezed it from 180 days to 120. Suits filed in December. There's no report in April. I waited till June because I wanted to be able to say I waited 180 days just to be sure. We don't get a hearing till September. The second report is not filed till the end of October. We're now 10 months, 300 days after suit is filed. When we get this second report, which is a report from someone who is obviously unqualified. So we have a non-report, an extension granted, a second report from somebody obviously unqualified, and the Waco court says, sorry, you don't have the right to an interlocutory appeal, even though the legislature expressly amended the Civil Practice and Remedies Code to provide for an interlocutory appeal in Med-Mal cases. That's, I think, an absurd result. And in response to your question or your comment, Justice Brister, about what if the term has not been served is defined in the statute, I think it is. I think right there in C, that is the definition of has not been served. So I think if it frustrates the intent of the legislature and the purposes of the statute if there is no right to an interlocutory appeal here. I think the way the statute reads, the plaintiff has to go back to subsection A and therefore we can move to dismiss under B. I think the statute sets up well for what I'm saying it does, that we get an interlocutory appeal.
Let me ask one question. Your first point when you stood up, you said you can't use a second expert to cure a deficient report.
Yes, Your Honor.
It seems like if we're talking about the purpose of the statute, the whole idea being we want to get rid of non-meritorious claims, what difference does it make whether it's the same expert or another expert if the fact of the matter is we have an affidavit showing a meritorious claim?
I think, Your Honor, in this case, we don't have anything
No, I'm just going to one or more experts. You could file three or four affidavits before the 120 days trying to show a meritorious claim. So if the legislature's purpose was to get rid of the non-meritorious claims, what really difference? I'm wondering what harm does it do if an affidavit showing a meritorious claim is filed during that 30-day extension, or before, or we're still seeking to get rid of non-meritorious claims, let the meritorious claims go forward. So what harm if they use an extra or another expert?
I think that the legislature's purpose was in part to get rid of meritorious claims.
Unmeritorious claims.
And in addition, the legislature was putting the burden on the plaintiff. by squeezing that amount of time to 120 days, I think it was putting the burden on the plaintiff to prepare its case or his case. And that's where 74351L comes in.
But the legislature also gave 30 days.
Yes, Your Honor.
Allowed the trial court to do 30 days.
Yes. And what, as I was mentioning earlier, under 74.351L, there are various things that a defendant or plaintiff can do within the first 120 days. And under Heiner versus Gaspard, you can cure with a new expert within 120 days. What I'm arguing is that once you get to that 120 days, you as the plaintiff had better be sure about your expert and your report.
And my question is, what harm if they bring in a new expert in 30 days and show a meritorious claim?
I'm not sure there's a harm, Your Honor. I don't think there is a harm, other than I don't think it's consistent with the statute, with the language of the statute, because it changed from the old version to the new. And as the Danos Court said, that indicates an intent by the legislature that you cure it with the same person.
Well, does that offend the plain language of this statute as it's written right now? If we don't go back and compare it, we just read this statute. Do you think that offends the plain language of this statute?
I think it does, Your Honor, because under C, the language is cure the deficiency in the report. The report itself, the elements of the report are standard of care, breach, and causation. Whether or not someone is an expert or not, I think is separate and apart from whether the report is sufficient. So when you're curing it, you have to go back to the report with the same person.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. McRae. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.